Hey, let's start the show.
It's August 23rd, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, Norman Chan. How you doing, Mr. Chan?
Hello.
That's it? Just a hello?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
No idle chit-chat? No banter?
I'm wearing t-shirts.
You're not supposed to say that.
Oh, okay.
Against the rules. Are you recovered? Last night when we spoke last, you professed being extremely tired.
Yes.
I also was very tired. Are you recovered now? Did you get some rest?
Yeah.
Feeling better?
Yeah, got some sleep.
Joining us today, taking the erstwhile Gary Whitta's seat, Wesley Fenlon. How are you doing, Wes?
Hello. I'm not Gary Whitta.
You are not Gary Whitta.
But I'm doing pretty well.
You're pretty sassy, though.
I try.
You on a scale of 1 to 10, how sassy are you feeling right now?
I'm going to go with a 6. You haven't seen anything yet, Will.
Okay. So
is sassy a euphemism?
No, sassy is not a euphemism.
Oh, okay.
Why? Would you like sassy to be a euphemism?
Oh, usually when people ask you gauge how, how you're feeling from
yeah.
a scale,
yeah.
usually my experience is how
Where
raised
you
are.
Yeah, how sassy are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 10, Norm?
1.
You're not known, 0 sass?
0 blazeness?
Oh.
That's just boring.
Yeah, I mean, we should replace you with somebody who's at least 20% more sassy. Do you want to just get right into the news? There's a lot of news this week. We have a giant list of stuff to go down.
News.
We don't have a news theme. We should make a news theme that goes.
Joey's doing push-ups in the corner.
Thank you, Norman Chan. Did you see the fake iPhone rumor that those guys seeded earlier this week or last week?
I know we're not talking about iPhone rumors.
Well, we're not talking about the specifics of the rumor. We're talking about the fact that someone made a fake iPhone rumor and then it got reported all across the internet.
So this isn't even
as
a
fact.
Real rumor. It's a fake rumor.
Yes.
Rumor mongered everywhere.
Yes.
Are you talking about last week?
End of last week.
The crazy screws?
It was the crazy screws, impossible screws, basically. Somebody said, hey, let's see how iPhone rumors spread.
Was that really the intention?
It seems like it.
Describe the rumor.
The rumor was that Apple took Pentalobe one step farther. I don't read iPhone rumors, so I don't know.
Me either.
Yeah, so what describe Pentalobe.
So Pentalobe is like a Torx. It's a security bit, basically, for Apple-specific security bit. It's a kind of almost like a Torx, but with only five heads, and they're rounded. So basically, there's no normal screwdriver that will work
with
those.
You're going to need to go one step further back, because I don't think people understand what you're talking about.
Okay.
On the iPhone is assembled using
screws. One step
screws.
Further. What's the iPhone?
The iPhone is a phone, smartphone made by Apple.
Okay.
And it's assembled
what's a
using screws. It's a phone that can also send email and check the real internet.
What is the real internet? Explain internet.
It's not the way the dumb phones use internet.
Explain internet.
Internet is a series of tubes connected throughout the world.
Explain tubes.
Tubing is plastic.
Explain plastic.
Chemicals. It's the future. There's a future in plastic.
So the internet is chemicals?
Yeah, so the internet.
Whoa!
The internet's made of dead dinosaurs, guys. Okay.
That's true.
So Pentalobe are the security bits that Apple uses to hold the iPhone 4. And I think there weren't any on the iPad 3 because it's glued shut. But the iPhone 4, the two little screws on the base after the first like 6 or 8 months were changed from a normal Phillips head bit to a Pentalobe bit. And basically it's a security bit that prevents people from getting into the phone easily.
Normal people.
Normals like us. You have to be an authorized
also,
Apple service
Also, incredible
center.
Business opportunity for anyone who makes screwdrivers.
Well, the iFixit guys had a Pentalobe screwdriver 3 weeks after the Pentalobe screws first surfaced. So it's not exactly right, but it works, and you can unscrew Apple screws with them.
So the rumor is they've found something even tougher than Pentalobe screws.
Yeah, so the rumor is that in the iPhone 5...
The fake rumor.
The next iPhone.
This is the fake rumor, yeah. In the next, the new iPhone, Apple has replaced the already fairly secure Pentalobe screws with even more secure crazy time screws. And they had some renders and all that stuff. And I don't remember the
exact
path.
The rumor was spread based on a render?
I think that there was a render.
Yeah, there was a render.
I've seen pictures.
It looked terrible.
I think the rumor, they seeded the rumor on a forum someplace.
It was a terrible render.
Right? But didn't the rumor start? They seeded on a forum, and then a couple sites picked it up, and then a couple more sites picked
was that
it up.
Was that forum on the internet also used by a smartphone to read
explain
the rumor?
Smartphone. Yeah, it spread everywhere, and by the time it got reported twice, people stopped linking back to the original bogus forum post, and were just like, as soon as it basically, I think it was Wired or Huffington Post or someplace, people started referring to that as an authoritative source. So it went everywhere within like 3 or 4 days.
They should watch the newsroom. Then they would have...
explain the newsroom.
No one should watch the newsroom.
You don't like the newsroom?
I do not.
I haven't watched the newsroom.
I'm
going
to watch the last episode of the season just to finish it off,
yeah,
and probably never watch it again.
Yeah, it's... I do that a lot. Like if I watch the first season of a show and I like it okay and it keeps going, but then it like goes off a cliff midway through that season, I just stop watching. I did that with Weeds.
It's a good way to save your time.
Yeah.
You don't want to be just roped into that show for its whole life.
You don't want to watch 12 seasons of ER.
No, not 9 seasons of The Office or whatever. Like just call it at some point.
They're bringing home The Office now, you know. It's
too late.
Bringing back Steve Carell.
Not bringing back Steve Carell.
Yeah, he's coming back for the final season.
He's coming back for they paid him enough money to come back for the final season.
That's the word I've heard.
No.
The word on the street.
No.
Is that Steve Carell makes his triumphant return to The Office?
I think he might have a cameo in the season finale. Series finale.
So yeah, this is why we don't post iPhone rumors.
I can see why that rumor would be passed around, just because people already know that Apple doesn't really like you to get into their stuff and mess around with it. So
they hate that.
People will just naturally assume, oh, they're going to make it even harder. Sounds
it's an easy
like
rumor
Apple.
To pass around, yes.
Sounds
because
like Apple.
It is something that people want to bitch
about.
Well,
it's plausible, right?
I don't think it's plausible.
Well,
if anyone looked at that render, it would be
the idea
like terribly
is plausible.
It's plausible enough.
Inconvenient screw design.
The people who are assembling those phones have tiny, tiny hands, Norm.
Yeah, I know. They're in China.
Children. Wait, no, not children. That's
no, but
else.
Even for maintenance,
that never
genius.
Happens.
Yeah,
like so
do you think when a genius gets hired, they put his hand up on the thing, and if it's smaller than a certain size, then he becomes the iPhone screw removal guy?
I don't
think
it's about the hand size. It's about the tool required for that type of screw. Mm. The screw looked unnecessarily complicated, and it would be expensive to make, and the tools would break easily.
So you're just saying that the design didn't look very Apple-y?
No, the design did not look like it was practical at all.
Hmm. Interesting. So anyway, that's why we don't post rumors. That's the long. That's the short answer to a long question. People ask that
good
fairly
reason.
Regularly.
No, that's because it was a stupid rumor that was the worst rumor ever.
Oh, so you're defending rumors now?
No, I think that if you look at an iPhone case and it goes, okay, that looks like a genuine iPhone case, it's a photo of the new casing, then it's easy to believe that that is a real case. But if you look at a render of a screw that looks unlike what anyone would design as a screw, then of course common sense prevails.
The fundamental problem with rumors, though, is that they are a mirror on your desire. You see a 16x9 iPhone screen.
The problem with rumors is that people don't care about what rumors they post. And they just post all the rumors, and there's no filter. But if you use common sense and you filter out what looks like it could be legitimate and what does not look legitimate just by looking at it.
How are you liking your Apple television, Norm?
I think there is going to be an Apple television.
Yeah, next year in March.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know there's going to be an iPad mini. I'd put many eggs on it.
Mm. Anyway.
There's informed speculation, and then there's renders on a forum.
The thing I wonder about these kind of rumors is, you know, you look back like 3 years at the average phone or smartphone, the kind of camera you had on there is like 1 megapixel, maybe 2 if you had a sweet phone. And now
Nokia.
it's like 5 or 8 megapixels, right? Like camera phones are getting really good. Why are all the leaked photos still so shitty? At what point is that going to change?
Well, it's the people in the factories probably can't afford the smartphone.
In 2020, are all these workers going to have like 8 megapixel camera phones and take these awesome HD photos of
low light cameras? It's because it's some guy in a warehouse.
I mean, this has to get better at some point, right?
You're saying that guy doesn't take his lighting in and have a light table
with a
psych wall.
He is
the
not
whole thing?
Leaking well enough.
No. Yeah. No, definitely not.
I like this critique. You should run a rumor
if you're gonna leak a photo, take a better
fucking take some pride in your work.
Yeah,
underpaid workers, step it up.
Yeah, do better for nothing.
Use smartphones.
We're horrible people.
Don't use dumb phones.
AT&T and FaceTime have been in the news this week. Because AT&T is saying, hey, if you're an valued AT&T customer and you would like to use
value my money
FaceTime on our cellular network, the only way that we're going to allow you to do that.
That's a big feature in iOS 6.
It is, that you can use FaceTime over cellular.
Yeah.
They're not going to let you do that unless you sign up for their new shared data plans, which
mobile
are
share plan.
A universal ripoff. Like, there's no way that you can do that data plan unless you live in you have a Brady Bunch sized family with like 12 kids.
No normal person.
Every single
there
person.
There's no way
your phone.
You're a normal person.
If you are a single dude who has one phone and one tablet, mobile share is the biggest ripoff in the world.
Yes.
If you are
limited cases where mobile share makes sense.
Even like Gina and I both have smartphones, both have tablets. Doesn't make sense at all. There's no way it makes sense for us.
And it effectively gets rid of unlimited data.
Well, even compared to the individual plans that are already not unlimited data, it still is a horrible ripoff. The cost per gigabyte is astronomical compared to even the worst of their individual plans. So
where does it make sense?
I've been thinking
mobile
about-
share? Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. You have to have like 8 people attached to the thing.
So it makes sense.
And no one
when
has
there
to...
are up to when you are using the max 10 devices and you need to use those devices, but maybe not necessarily use a lot of data on every device.
And you want 220 gigs of data at $10. The only time the data rate gets the same for the shared plan as it does for the individual plans is when you're at the maximum, which is 20 gigabytes for $200 a month. They charge a connection fee per device on top of that. That's astounding. It's like $40, $30.
If you're in a family of 5 and everyone has a smartphone and there are a couple of tablets shared in the house and there's a lot of leftover data that you're leaving on the table.
Or if you have one person that uses a shitload of data and a bunch of people that use like 200 megs a month.
Then this may make sense for you.
Maybe.
But mobile share is the only way, on AT&T at least, that you will be able to use FaceTime over cellular.
So there's been a big uproar about this. People are understandably upset because they want to use FaceTime over cellular.
AT&T made people mad again?
I know, it's hard to believe, right?
Well, and they got really defensive about it.
The interesting... So they,
FaceTime over cellular, first, or mobile share actually launches today.
Oh, today's the day?
Today is the day.
Wow.
You can
do not do
over
that. Don't do it.
Share.
It is a bad deal all the way around. The Verizon one is just as bad and almost as bad in fairness. It's also a bad deal. And the reason it's a bad deal is because you feel like if you're buying more of something, you should get a bulk discount for it, right? If you go to the grocery store and buy a box of Frosted Flakes that's 20 ounces and you go to Costco and buy a 400-ounce box of Frosted Flakes, your cost per ounce is going to go down when you buy the 400-ounce box.
The only reason people go to Costco.
Yeah, because you have to store that shit, and by the time you get to the end of the box, the flakes are going to be really stale and gross, and you it's a bad idea. You shouldn't shop for groceries at Costco unless you have like 8 people living in your house, like you guys.
Works for us.
Yeah.
Or freezer space.
Or a lot of freezer space, yes. So the reason the mobile share stuff offends me is that you're paying more per unit data on the mobile shared plan, the bulk plan, the bulk discount, than you would be if you were buying the individual plans. And they add the connection fee on top of it. So each device that you connect costs between $10 and $30 because they want to include unlimited texting on the phone plans. So it's a ripoff. So they're blocking FaceTime on grandfathered and unlimited plans, which they've now been trying to kill for going on 2 years.
And they probably will effectively kill once we move to LTE.
Real LTE, not the bullshit 4G we have now. And they're also limiting it on individual plans. This is the thing that surprised me because like, I understand them wanting to get people off of the unlimited data plans. I expected them to do that even because, you know, it's going to be a customer service nightmare when I use FaceTime.
How much data do you use per month?
Between 600 and megabytes and 2 gigs usually.
On a phone?
On
just
the phone.
Smartphone.
Yeah, just on the phone. I don't That's usually a have a data
range,
plan on the
600
tablet.
Megs to 2 gigs. And it really depends on whether you're watching video or not.
No. Actually, for me, it's music and podcasts because I download that stuff
podcasts.
In the car.
Wow.
I spend a lot of time in the car.
1.4 gigs of podcasts is a
Since
lot.
Since I'm on Sprint, I never check. I think the last time I looked at how much data I used was like the second month I got my phone because I was still excited about data.
Yeah, you had a data plan.
Yeah, and that was like 2 gigs. But that was 2 years ago, so I really have no idea these days what I use.
Well, and a lot of it varies for people because I talk to people about this a lot. A lot of people, their usage varies based on whether they have Wi-Fi at work. So a lot of people go to work, they don't have Wi-Fi, they use their phone as a radio or as music streaming or whatever. And like if you listen to RDO or Spotify or iTunes Match on your iPhone all day, you can use a whole shitload of data when you add it up over the course of a month.
Especially YouTube.
The Google Play Music a lot because I have my whole library synced to that. So I use that when I'm commuting all the time.
Exactly.
If you have an iPhone, you can check how much data you're using on AT&T just by calling *3282#.
That's data,
it's
right?
*data#. And then AT&T will send you a text message and it'll tell you how much data you've been
600
using.
And some megabytes this month.
490
so far.
Of unlimited.
Wow, nice job, Norm.
Only 204 messages.
We knew they were going to ban this from the unlimited plans because they want to get people off of those. It's sleazy and bad, but whatever. I didn't think that they'd block them from unlimited from the limited single user plans. That was a big surprise to me. And they're really super defensive about it. So they released this press release that basically said, look, people complained and said, hey, this is a violation of net neutrality. You can't limit one service, not another. AT&T came back and said, look, we don't have to allow pre-installed phones. It's a pre-installed app, so it's not covered under the net neutrality tenants. We don't have to allow pre-installed apps on the phone at all. And basically said, you know, fuck all you guys. We don't care. Keep complaining and sign up for mobile share if you want to use FaceTime over cellular.
Now, is this something people will be able to get around with a jailbroken iPhone like the way people were...
The tethering hack?
Yeah, like the tethering hack.
So they stopped
they
the tethering
stopped
hack
the
eventually?
That,
yeah. I think that it works again, and it's kind of a back and forth. I would assume probably that people who jailbreak will be able to get around it. The interesting thing is they don't block things like video Skype and some of the other video conferencing services that are downloadable apps, which they wouldn't be allowed to because of the net neutrality regulations.
So it sounds like so they're doing this because they can, but they're probably also scared of how many people are going to start using it because it's baked in.
Well, they're definitely worried about that. They're definitely using it as a way to leverage the data plans. There's two problems. One is that if Apple pulls FaceTime out of the OS and makes it a download from the App Store, just like iBooks is, there's no reason they would then not be able to block it according to the rules that they've stated in the release that they made.
Will Apple do that?
I don't have any
idea.
Apple really doesn't like AT&T.
But it's integrated into dialing and the contact.
But
it's
iBooks is too. iBooks is integrated. When you go to the App Store and like there used to be a thing that would pop up and say, hey, do you want to install
iBooks?
But
it's not an integrated feature, as in when you go into your contacts, it says make FaceTime call next to a person.
Yeah, but what's to keep them from making you tap the FaceTime button and having that pop up a, hey, you don't have FaceTime installed. Do you want to get it from the App Store?
No, but
Find My Friends.
Is iBooks, it would change the way you'd have to have two versions of like the phone app and two versions of the contacts app. So FaceTime is there or not.
Well, or they'd have to build an API that integrates FaceTime.
Yeah. It's a lot of engineering work for a stupid decision.
The larger issue is that in our kind of informal tests, FaceTime uses a shitload of data.
Oh, it uses a lot of data.
Yeah. It's between 300 and 850 or 900 kilobits per second per stream. So both up and down, both of which count against your bandwidth cap on a phone. So like you're looking at, I think I figured it out to be between 88 and 250 megs per 20-minute call.
Does it have quality settings like Skype?
It does not.
Just go up and down?
No.
So it's just solid?
It does it automatically. And it seemed like the thing that changed the bandwidth more than anything else was the amount of movement in the scene. Like when I was waving my hand in front of the camera, it would get up and walk around.
Right, because that's a redraw all that.
Exactly,
all that
more
data.
Pixels. Yeah. But yeah, it's each way. So you're looking at 250 megs for 20 minutes, possibly, which adds up really, really fast.
That's a lot for somebody who's on 2 gigs a month.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically a gig. It's a little bit under a gig an hour. So like if you're traveling and you call your wife and you talk to her for 30 minutes, then you could go through a quarter of your 2 gig data plan really easily. Even if you're on a mobile share plan, even if you're on the 3 or 5 gig mobile share plan, like that's 3 hours of FaceTime over the course of a month, 5 hours of FaceTime over the course of a month, which could go incredibly fast. And you know, there's no limits to it's not like cell phones where you get X number of minutes. It varies based on the scene that you're shooting. So there's really no way to keep track of it. Like it's not a tool that seems ideal for over cellular connections.
You're not going to have very relaxed conversations on that if you're on a data plan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll be something you pop on for 5 minutes and say, okay.
I get anxiety watching YouTube on my phone on non-unlimited.
You get anxiety doing everything though, Norm. Yeah. So yeah, it's I mean, I think the problem with FaceTime on AT&T isn't, and Verizon too, for that matter. I don't really think the, I mean, it's lame that they're blocking it, but the larger problem is that the data plans that they offer make it a prohibitive cost. At $10 an hour, which is what the overage charge is for AT&T, realistically, no one's going to do FaceTime over cellular for more than a couple minutes at a time. So
it's too bad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I remember the AT&T ad from 1993 where I was buying tickets to the ball game from my cell phone. And
that's going to happen.
I can do that right now, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. You can even use your phone as the way to enter the stadium.
My phone is my passport. So yeah, that's AT&T and FaceTime. I don't think there's going to be any kind of ruling from the FCC or anything like that. They're relatively toothless these days, it seems like. So
God, AT&T is going to have to do something, or
I'm switching.
I anticipate a lot of switches. Unless, many switchers.
Like at this point, I'm out of rollover minutes, which was the last thing holding me back. So, you know, there's no reason not to switch to a better carrier at this point.
Since Sprint doesn't have a real LTE system in place yet, I'm really thinking about switching to Verizon this fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Verizon LTE on the MiFi and on the iPad is really fast, which was always my reason to not use the Verizon phones before. And if the battery life is good, then let's go. I think everybody switched to Verizon.
I'm ready for some fast data. Could
bitch about a new faceless multinational corporation at that point. Ours had a really good story this week about passwords, and it was something I hadn't really thought about, but it makes a lot of sense. They were saying that because of all the high profile password breaches, where suddenly people have access to hundreds of thousands of actual passwords that people use, they're able to build better rainbow tables. We should probably take a step back and explain what rainbow tables are. But basically, 10 years ago, when you were building an app to crack passwords, you ran through the dictionary and you used common dog names and stuff like that. It was all based on guesses about what passwords people actually use. Mm-hmm. Now we have actual data about the passwords people use in the real world, and it's allowing people much better, you know, thanks to Gawker and Sony and all the places that have lost unhashed, unsalted passwords in the last 5 years. Yeah. So the people who are trying to break passwords have a much better idea of what kind of passwords people actually use. So things like password with a 4 and a 0 and secure and Dell and all the things that people use as their dumb passwords are the ones that they go through first. And it's much, much easier to break into stuff now than it was 5 years ago.
And when you look at the lists, like I know we have at least one story about this, about like most common passwords people use that really suck, right? Tons and tons of people use those passwords.
Oh, yeah. Thousands.
So even if you go 1,000 passwords down the list to something that's kind of out there, mm-hmm. there's probably still dozens of people using that one password that you could nail with it, basically, if you're trying to hack them.
Well, and because people do things like use their mother's maiden name or their first dog or stuff like that for their passwords, like if your password is Smith something, you're fucked. There's nothing you can do. You need to change that.
Change it.
So, I mean, the thing that's interesting about this is a lot of times people are using rainbow tables, which are basically – I'm probably going to mess this up because I haven't read about it in a long time. But they're basically pre-computed hashes of common passwords. So they go through and instead of trying to feed passwords through, they'll download something that's decrypted and then hit it with the result that you get. I'm going to mess it. I'm not going to talk about it because we're going to – I should have read this before we started the podcast. Norm is sad. Do you either of you guys use 1Password or LastPass or something like that?
I don't. I'll probably switch by the end of the year because I'm starting to get nervous. But
it's inconvenient.
I do use a lot of different passwords. Yeah, so yeah.
Have a good memory. Use strings of words. Don't use just type entire sentences out. Well,
the string of words thing has been kind of disproven too, though.
So you're saying don't use strings of words?
Strings of
don't use sentences.
The problem is that passwords in general are bad. Like two-factor is the future of password management and all that jazz.
That's an inconvenient future.
Do you do two-factor on Google still, Norm, or do you turn it off?
No. Yeah. I've been using two-factor for years.
I found that 1Password, once I got used to it, has gotten much easier. Like the first couple of weeks were real hard.
It's a lot of copy-pasting, right?
Well, no, because if you use the browser is anything that's in the browser, you can install the extension. It'll autofill with...
So it'll just like pull everything out of Chrome that I already have in there.
I don't know if it pulls everything out of Chrome, but basically you when you sign up for a new site, when you create a new account, what I do now actually is just use it to generate the password for that site. and I do something ridiculous with a lot of characters and punctuation and all that, it's like 20 characters long. Like my Twitter password is 46 characters or something insane now, which is real hard when I'm setting up a device that doesn't have one password installed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you set that up. It says, hey, do you want to save this password? And then you save the password for that site. And the next time you come there, you type in your 1Password password, hit the autofill button, and it logs in for you.
Because you're on your computer that's confirmed already. That's
right,
yours.
Right. And it syncs that file across Dropbox, which is really easy. The problem then becomes that you have to – my Dropbox password has to be in 1Password, which is – there's a chicken and egg thing there that took a little while to figure out.
It's not perfect, but it's better than getting hacked.
Yeah, it's the thing. That's exactly it. The thing that I've realized is that it's easier to be annoyed a little bit every single day than have two weeks of hell like Matt Honan had a couple of weeks ago.
Or just stay off the internet.
Yeah, or just get off the internet for a few years.
Yeah,
it'll all be better when you come back. Twitter is locking out people out of stuff. Twitter is locking everything down. It seems like.
So they lock both Instagram and Tumblr.
And LinkedIn.
Out of...
The LinkedIn was a while
now,
ago.
Now, what do they lock out of?
So...
What do they lock Tumblr out of?
So what they said is Tumblr can't use Twitter to... use the Twitter API to determine who your friends are. So like that... Remember that you could go to Tumblr, you say, oh, I want to find my friends on Tumblr.
When you create a newcomer Tumblr account.
Yeah. Or you can do it...
people to follow.
Yeah.
One way they associate you with your Tumblr account is using your Twitter ID because it's a very common association.
You can't do that anymore. They took that away yesterday or the day before. Same thing for LinkedIn. Same thing for Instagram. Instagram makes sense because Facebook bought Instagram and Facebook is Twitter's enemy and yada yada.
Instagram is also where this is would be most of an inconvenience because more people are creating Instagram accounts now than ever and following people on Instagram using their Twitter accounts. Someone who's using Twitter is more likely to have an Instagram account. Other way around, someone who's using Instagram is more likely to have a Twitter account than someone who's using Tumblr.
I think people who are on Tumblr probably have everything accounts. Tumblr seems like this.
Do people create Tumblr accounts to follow other people? Follow friends?
I'm sure some do, but I don't think it's quite. I think it's still more of a blogging sharing platform than.
Yeah.
My exposure to Tumblr now is still just a broadcast medium for niche memes.
There are a handful of Tumblrs I follow from people who use it as like their personal. It's almost like LiveJournal used to be.
Sucks for Tumblr. Why not use a Medium?
Medium is not open to everybody.
What's the other
Branch.
One? Is it Branch?
Subtle with a V. Svubtle.
Yeah, the one where.
Svuddle.
Yeah.
Whatever
there are so
is.
Many blogging
like
tools now.
Like Svelte?
Like Svelte. Svuddle. Svuddle. I don't know how to say that. Medium. So we haven't talked about Medium yet, but this is a good opportunity to do it. Medium is Evan Williams and a bunch of people from early Twitter and Blogger doing a new blogging site. That kind of like it's decentralized. It's weird. So where Tumblr and Blogger and WordPress and all the other blogging hubs of the internet are centered around your page, right? Like if you set up a WordPress account, more or less, in order to see your post, I have to go to Wes's Tumblr or Wes's
right.
WordPress site.
Meetup.wordpress.com.
Yeah, Tumblr's a little bit different from that. Because you can kind of reshare stuff really openly between people. And like eventually you can follow down the path to find out where something came from. But still, if I reshare something, it'll show up on the Will page. Or if you reshare something, it'll show up on the West page or whatever. Medium doesn't have that. Medium just lets you say, okay, I want to attach this story that I just wrote, this post that I just wrote, to these three concepts. And those concepts can be times I got kicked in the groin or favorite drinks or whatever you can have concepts for.
Are they similar tags?
No, they're broader. They're both broader and kind of – they can be curated. So people can own a tag and kind of own a topic and kind of pull in posts that they find interesting there.
So it's like turning hashtags into some type of category.
Kind of, yeah. It's like a weird mix between hashtags and a wiki. And the thing is, it seems like the categories, the topics are non-exclusive. So like Wes could have a coffee page and I could have a coffee page. They'll both be about coffee. There's no kind of who got there first and who owns coffee now. So it's almost like Reddit for posts.
Sounds
instead
weird.
Of links. Like the thing that I thought of was here's a way to build these kind of hubs around ideas and concepts. And
Pinterest.
No, Pinterest is blogs shortened. It's just a way to share pictures.
So does this make it easier to discover content, you think, around
maybe
these certain subjects?
It's it's interesting for people who are aggregators right now. So people like Maria Popova and those and Steve Silberman, and people who do like freelance writing, but then also keep up kind of these link share blogs where they don't really do a whole lot of original writing, but they find cool stuff on a regular basis. Like it's interesting for them because then it gives them a place to kind of grab all that stuff together and make it their own. But I don't understand from a content creator perspective. I don't understand what the benefit of being on Medium is right now. Whereas Pinterest and WordPress and all these other and Tumblr make perfect sense because there's a lot of people on Tumblr and they're very sharey and they spread stuff around.
There will be a lot of people on Medium.
Undoubtedly. But like if you look at one of the things that Dave always used to say, and he's right, is that like there are only a few reasons people do things on the internet. They either do it because they want to feed their ego and feel good about what they're doing, or they want to get laid, or people don't do things on the internet out of the kindness of their heart for the most part. So I don't get what the hook on Medium is, because you don't have the ego of the page of seeing a bunch of people come to your page. I don't think there are girls there really. Maybe there are. I don't know what the hook is.
Maybe it's a Wikipedia thing.
It could be like Wikipedia. I mean, maybe it's Wikipedia for articles. I don't know. We'll see.
Important message from Biz Stone. Evan Williams wants to talk to you about donating to Medium.
What is it that Jimmy Wales thing says? It's not an important. Is it an important message?
Yeah, I think it's an earnest important something. Message
it's
from
an
Jimmy
important
Wales.
Message from Jimmy there Wales.
It's just the photo that's earnest.
Yeah, the photo is very earnest.
It gets sadder. Puppy eyed Jimmy Wales.
So we didn't talk about the Twitter third-party client stuff, but they announced a whole bunch of restrictions for API, for their API, for people who build third-party clients that basically are limiting the growth of those clients to 2x current usage numbers. And there's a bunch of other stuff. They said a year ago they don't want people building Twitter clients anymore. So
why don't they build a better Twitter client?
I don't have any idea. The thing that worries me about that more than anything else is the idea that they think that Twitter is one size fits all. Because their clients are very much made for people who consume content, not who are creating content.
Well, if they control the way people consume content, then they can control the way people consume the ads.
I'm fine with that. I have no problem with them controlling the way people consume the ads. What I want is Twitter clients that are tuned for me, that make it easy for me to manage a large follower list. A large list of people I follow.
And multiple accounts.
And multiple accounts and all that. And their clients aren't very good at that stuff.
Does regular web Twitter have the inline ads that pop up?
Yes,
tweet
absolutely.
Style? That's interesting because I guess my ad blocker just...
No, I don't think...
I've never seen an ad
yeah,
that promoted
your ad blocker is pulling them out.
I've never seen a promoted tweet on web Twitter, but I see them on the Android app.
Oh, yeah. The Android app just got updated, didn't it?
It's okay. I mean, at some point, I'm going to switch to something better. Either when I get an iPhone or a new Android phone, I'm going to actually kind of care about what app I'm using.
You didn't go out there and look for it?
Yeah, but I was using TweetDeck for a really long time. And
it's real bad on mobile.
I never liked the mobile app. And on the desktop side, I kind of just gave it up because I was tired of it.
Twitter, which I think is called Plume now.
That's a thing.
Was good. It was French pronunciation, French spelling of Twitter.
I didn't understand that.
Twitter.
At all. Okay. Twitter. Yeah,
Twitter.
Noted.
Wow. that could be communicated really easily.
So yeah, that's happening. I don't know. Like, do you guys find ads on Twitter offensive? I they don't bother me.
I like that. I can dismiss it.
I would happily pay Twitter for the service that I get from them for analytics and stuff. I mean, I wouldn't pay a lot, but I'd pay like $5 a month or $60 a year or something like that.
$60 a year. You're a very, very small number of people would do that.
Well,
not enough to sustain that business relative to the hundreds of millions of people using Twitter right now.
Maybe. Analytics would be nice. I'd also pay for no ads.
I think you'd get bored of analytics in a week.
Well, it depends on how you use Twitter. I would like to know more. I mean, right now you kind of use Twitter and you don't know what people like and don't like.
I think it would change the way you use Twitter in a negative way by knowing too much about how people respond.
Yeah, but that's better than Clout at least, which is just creating a bullshit number.
No, I don't want either of those.
Do you use Clout still?
No, absolutely not. I don't want to know how my tweets are
received
in a way that would influence the way.
I liked that Halo tweet the other day, Norm.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Scott Lava. At Scott Lava.
The Nikon's app camera. We talked a little bit about this last week, I think, but it's announced and it's out there. It's Android camera?
It's an Android camera. It's Android S800C. It's point and shoot, 60 megapixel point and shoot that runs Gingerbread 2.3. I don't know why.
So it's just
that Polaroid camera.
Does it work, though? Because that Polaroid camera didn't work.
No, the Polaroid camera did not work. I don't know why Nikon decided to want to put Android on a camera. I know why they did that, but I don't know why they thought this would be a great idea to have when you boot up a camera to see the Android home screen.
Yeah, I don't want that.
With a button that says shooting, and a button that says play, and a button that says calendar, and a button that says browser, and a button that says email.
So they've got a phone in my camera.
It is a not a phone because there's no cellular connection and you can't make phone calls with it. So it is much like an iPod Touch. So the Android equivalent iPod Touch would be, what is it, Galaxy Player?
Yeah.
It's like the Galaxy Player, but in a bulkier body with a point-and-shoot lens attached to it. I think they're realizing that people like Instagram and people like Dropbox, but even with the 5 and 8 megapixel cameras on their smartphones, those are not becoming good enough. It's much like that Apple ad, the fake Apple ad that we saw like 2 days ago, the fake Apple iPhone 5 ad, and the guy's like, the douchey guy's like, oh, Arne, here's new iPhone 5. People are sad and lonely, and they have no friends, and they want to take photos of their food.
I am sad and lonely. I don't have any
friends.
And
so now it's an iPhone 5, which is basically a DSLR with the iPhone in the back. So that's what Nikon did. They put a point-and-shoot sensor, point-and-shoot lens with 10x zoom, and it looks, in the front of it, looks like a point-and-shoot body.
Does it have GPS?
It does have GPS.
That's nice.
And then, I don't care about GPS on the phone.
I like geotagged. I like geotagged pictures. I like knowing where I was.
Nope.
It's a good way to keep track.
Do you think it's also just a user interface familiarity thing? Because 100 million
that, they are arguing
have
that it is. So they're arguing that, you know, people know the Android home screen. I think it's laziness, but I think they're saying, oh, people understand icons it's tap to zoom, tap to focus, and pinch to zoom, and that's all built in Android. So let's make that the primary interface for a camera. That I think is stupid.
Well, but if they can't do something better than the default Android Gingerbread experience, why shouldn't they use what's already out there?
Because
we slam phone manufacturers all the time.
No, because you're using your phone as a phone and you're going to be upgrading your phone expecting all the updates. With a camera, you want the camera catered experience. How when's the last time you updated your camera firmware and your camera?
Never.
Because you don't need that. As long as you're familiar with it, it's good enough. So make an experience that's good enough and let people download the apps. I think the apps thing is fine, and let people upload directly to Instagram. That's fine. But make a good camera interface.
So when you pinch to zoom, does the zoom lens come out of the camera?
See, I don't think, and it's not even opening up the camera, the hardware to the software. So yes, you can download Instagram. Yes, you can download maybe like filters and some app, but
yeah,
you're not going to be able to tap into the camera like you could with, Magic Lantern.
That would be kind of wild though if they did tie it in that way to bring gestures we're used to on camera phones.
I don't think that's a good idea.
It would suck.
Physical buttons are much better.
I'm talking about it being incredibly slow.
I'm not saying it would be a good thing.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying it would be kind of wild to see
things that would be fucked
up. To see people who basically, like, if this was their first camera, a smartphone, if that's their first camera, and then they get a point and shoot, and it is their
and
natural
then, and then you
instinct.
Pinch, their natural instinct is to pinch the zoom and then to wait for the motor to turn. Mm-hmm. That is, it sounds terrible.
So all the Android stuff is basically gives you a way to manipulate photos on the device. It's not like you're actually changing the camera.
It is not a camera that runs Android. It is an Android device with a point and shoot camera attached to it.
Oh, that's less exciting. Speaking of Android, a lot of Android app piracy sites got seized by the U.S. government this week.
Yeah, Android app piracy is apparently a big problem.
Yeah, it's we've heard that for a long time. Developers have always said, "Hey, yeah, Android app piracy is a real issue," and it's because the APKs weren't encrypted until very recently. So, one person could buy it. They stripped out the identifying information, then they'd post it on the site, and you could download basically anything you wanted for free. It's why a lot of Android games have that downloader. So when you buy a game from that market, it's basically just a front end to download the actual game, the 2 or 3 gig game. Is my understanding. That's one of the reasons they do that. They had the movie piracy treatment, where they get the three logos from the Homeland Security and the FBI that says this.
Same when you log on to
this domain has been seized.
It's a scary banner.
Well, I mean, you shouldn't fucking steal. It's real simple.
Right. Instill fear into the heart of pirates.
Yeah.
You know, Android pirates should kidnap people and hold them for ransom.
Yar. Avast ye landlubbers. Dominion launched and then kind of was taken away immediately. They partnered with a third party to build an HTML5 version of Dominion, the card game, the deck building game.
Which sounds awesome.
Who wouldn't? Like, I don't know. Have you played this? Do you have an iPad?
I do not have an iPad.
You're not an iPad guy. Norm, have you played Ascension on the iPad?
Yeah, it's a great experience.
Yeah, it's a fantastic deck building game. I mean, the game, I think, is probably less good in person than it is on the iPad. The iPad version is a fantastic experience.
I think the best cards, CCG to digital transition was Magic. And if Dominion can take the Magic.
Dominion's not a CCG. Dominion is a deck building game.
Well, Magic is.
Magic, there's two components. You have to buy the packs to get the right cards.
Yes.
And, you know, like Pokemon.
So how's Dominion
going to
make money?
So Dominion is going to sell expansions.
So you have to buy packs.
No, you don't know because you know what you get. That's the difference. Dominion, you know which cards you're getting.
Cards. You're buying cards either way.
You're buying cards either way.
Buy cards for better experience.
Although Magic has kind of changed that aspect of their business on the digital side with the last few
games. You buy pre-made decks.
The last few games they put out are basically just here's 10 decks or 20 decks or something, and you can kind of tweak them a little bit, but you basically are just buying the game framework and then playing it, which I think is the right way to go with digital.
As opposed to getting people to spend real money for fake things that are worthless, even more worthless. My worthless mana is worth less than your worthless whatever the most expensive Magic card is.
That's correct.
Because
I can
Black Lotus.
I can resell my
thank goodness I remember
my
that.
Real Magic cards
exactly.
Or whatever if I was bothered, but you can't resell your digital mana.
No.
Oh, here we go. So here is I'm finding God searching stuff from the internet. Oh, this sucks. So they launched and then they had so much demand the service crumbled. It's Goku, G-O-K-O, not G-O-K-U.
So not Son Goku Hero.
Not Son Goku Hero.
The Japanese
no,
evil.
No. No, this is, they launched, they went live, and the launch was so shitty that they put it back into beta and locked everybody down.
Oh, wow.
If you want to sign up and try out the beta, you can. But I think it's going to go, this is going to be on Android, PC, iOS, and I think Facebook, too, but I'm not sure about that.
No offline play.
No offline play, but you can play against people on other platforms. So even though you're an Android person, I could still play with you, Wes.
Awesome.
Isn't that nice?
That is great.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. So they made like a hardcore apology. It's goko.com if you want to check it out. You can sign up for the beta. They'll invite people in later. I think the way it's going to work is that the base Dominion set is free, and if you want to get more cards, you have to pay X number of dollars to have them. And I assume since there's no offline mode, probably you're going to need a lot of cards in order to be able to play with other people. Because I assume you'll have to have a matchup. Like, you have to agree on the set of cards you play.
It sounds pretty cool, but I have to admit I'm kind of disappointed that it's not Goku.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The thing that's neat about Dominion, when you guys, do you guys play Dominion a little bit at the
I've
house,
right?
I've only
played like two or three times.
Okay.
But I know the structure of the game, but I'm by no means a Dominion Pro.
Do you play, when you play, do you like take all the cards that you have with you and just kind of pick random ones from in the different sets? Or do you pick, say, like, we're going to play Intrigue and Seaside today, and those are the only two sets you play?
The first time I played, it was just a, like, we use the intro.
You use the learner game.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I think the problem with having too many board games and having new people play board games is that every time you play, you get caught up in let's play the intro deck again. Never get beyond like three or four games into advanced tactics.
The thing is, if everybody but one person knows how to play, you don't necessarily need the intro deck. You don't need to play the intro deck. Just FYI. Just take out any of the confusing like duration cards or anything like that. Anyway, so that's coming out soon. You can try the beta now. It'll be on, it's HTML5, so it works everywhere, basically. Do you know what a bonobo is? Bonobo?
No.
Bonobos? How do you say that? I don't even know.
What is it?
Bonobo?
Bonobo?
It used to be called a pygmy chimpanzee, but now they have a separate name. Bonobo.
Sounds really like offensive
bonobo.
To chimpanzees.
Why?
The pygmy chimpanzee.
Because they were small.
They're small chimpanzees.
Yeah, why is pygmy offensive?
I don't know. It just sounds... It sounds
they're
like
little monkeys. Little chimps.
Yeah, because monkeys are already tiny.
They're the tiniest apes. Mm. No, chimps aren't monkeys. It's very different. Chimps don't have tails. They're great apes. Monkeys aren't great apes.
These are tiny monkeys.
Tiny chimpanzees.
Was there an explorer chimpanzee who explored the jungle and wrote a book about his travels and saw the pygmy chimpanzees and thought he was a giant?
Are you talking about Curious George?
I'm talking about Gulliver's Travels.
Oh. I thought you were talking about Heart of Darkness.
Do the pygmy chimpanzees make chocolate?
No, they are not Oompa Loompas. They are bonobos. Someone in Iowa, I think, taught bonobo monkeys or chimpanzees how to make tools using flint napping techniques. Do you know what flint napping is?
No, and what are the chimps doing in Iowa?
They're in captivity. They're in a chimp.
It's the only place in America we got open space left.
It's where BJ and the bear.
Do you want the chimps in our zoos like roaming free like in Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
Yeah, why not? Put diapers on them. Put them out in the world. I love chimps. They're cute.
I think diapers on a chimp, I guess that's a good idea, but there's a lot of upkeep there.
There's a real specific reason you put a diaper on a chimp.
I want them in South Dakota so that I can see Mount Rushmore and the chimps.
Covered with chimps?
Yeah.
So someone taught a bonobo monkey called Kanzi, I believe, how to flint nap. Flint napping is where you take a rock and like a piece of flint or chert or some sort of mineral that has that breaks cleanly into straight edges, and you kind of strike them against each other. We should do a video of this. It'd be really fun to learn how to do.
Are we smarter than a pygmy chimpanzee?
It's theorized.
Can we teach Will to?
Yeah. Can I beat Kanzi at tool making? Mm. It's theorized that this is one of the ways that early hominids made tools, because we did, you know, how do you make the first tool is the problem, right? You can't just bust out the lathe and you know, make a drill bit. You have to start with
sharp rocks,
two rocks that you bang together.
You need tools to make tools.
Exactly. Mm. So we learned about flint napping from a Native American who lived primitively in North America, who was unfound by civilization in the early part of the century. And he taught anthropologists how to do the flint napping technique, and then we've been studying it ever since.
The original tool making technique, still practiced today.
Not anymore. This was the last turn of last century.
Passed down
100 years ago.
The pygmy chimpanzee.
Yeah,
pygmy chimpanzee.
Yes. You're focused on this pygmy part, and I think you're missing the highlight of the story. The highlight of the story is
that... tiny hands.
No, he's not that small. What you think of as a chimp is a pygmy chimpanzee, I believe.
What?
Yes. Like when you think about BJ and the bear was a chimp, a bonobo probably. Normal chimps are big. They're like people sized. They can kill you.
What?
A normal chimp could rip your head off.
But they have no tail.
No tail. No prehensile tail. But they have.
Can they work pencil lobe screwdrivers?
No, look, dude. They have foot thumbs.
Can they build iPhones?
No, we can't.
They have crazy grip though, right?
Yes.
If they can flit nap, why can't they build iPhones?
They have four hands. That's two times as many hands as we have.
He can choke you to death and punch you in the face.
Exactly. And still have two hands left over.
Stop. These are movie ideas.
So that he can make tools. And when he learned how to use those tools to bust open a log that some scientists glued shut to get food out of it. So they took a log and then they clogged a hollow log.
They made a fake safe out of that log.
They made a chimpanzee safe. And he used the tools that he had made, 156 of them, to cut open the log.
Holy crap.
Now, one of the other chimpanzees just picked up the log and smashed it on the ground until it cracked and the food came out.
Also worked, and he was probably...
He ate a little bit faster, yeah.
Stupid, smart pygmy chimpanzee.
But the pygmy chimpanzee made tools that showed the same kind of wear patterns that the early hominid tools that date back 2 million years showed. So, yeah, we got 2 million years, guys. Till the damn dirty apes take over.
If raccoons ever figure out how to do this stuff, we are so dead.
Every night, the raccoons come from my recycling bin.
If raccoons figure out how to open a sack, like a potato sack, we're fucked.
Did I tell you about the raccoon that got stuck in my compost bin?
No.
That was real bad. So my compost bin is in an L-shaped crook. With like the trash can on one side and the recycling bin on the other. It has a lid.
Okay, it's one of those like plastic.
It's a plastic with wheels. You tilt it back and push.
Yep, we have one of those.
And I put the compost in the back so that the other two make it much harder to tip over.
Do you bag your compost?
Fuck no, you can't bag your compost.
I mean, you use paper bags.
I just have a bin, a pail, and I dump it out every few days.
Huh.
Yeah, so you get a metal garbage can.
Joey's doing push-ups.
Oh, he's doing push-ups on the weights. He makes us all look bad.
When I was a kid, I used to go camping on this island in South Georgia.
Of Misfit Toys?
Cumberland Island.
Oh, I've been there.
And yeah, it's really, really nice place. But there is a raccoon population there that has grown deviously intelligent.
Yeah.
And will like crawl up and unlock the boxes where people keep their food and pull stuff out. They are really smart. And you have to like suspend your...
Does that make you sad when you kill them?
I mean...
Wes kills them with his bare hands. Georgia.
I think they probably don't like it if you kill stuff on Cumberland Island.
Seems like you'd get in trouble.
Not completely sure, but yeah.
So you're not admitting to anything right now is what you're saying.
But I did see one raccoon there once with his hand stuck in a Mountain Dew bottle.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's sad.
Oh, that's so sharp. Oh, a bottle or can?
Plastic.
Okay. Plastic bottle, dude.
Yeah. Oh, stuck in a can. It would be
was
like
this like
torture.
Homer with the thing where they're going to cut his arms off and he just had to let go?
I'm not sure if his hand was stuck in there because he just wanted that Mountain Dew and he couldn't get it out.
Right.
Or if he was legit stuck and he couldn't.
What do you do in that situation?
You just walk away.
Do you try to help the raccoon?
No.
No, you don't help raccoon.
Raccoon will fuck you up. This has been established.
Did you bring up the smartphone? Start video recording?
This was years ago. But the bad thing is now... They probably have learned from that.
Yeah.
And now they know how to get their hands out of
boxing gloves.
Yeah.
They've made boxing gloves now.
Wow.
So the raccoon climbed up into my compost bin, and usually they like open the lid and then grab what's on the top, but the trash had been the day before. So he opened the lid and then jumped down in there and then realized he couldn't get out. So I had a pissed off raccoon, and all we were laying in bed, and all we could hear was horrible, horrible noises.
What do you do at that point?
I just.
Do you hose down?
What, the raccoon? Fuck no.
Get angrier.
I don't want an angry wet raccoon coming after me. What I did was I went outside and I moved the garbage can that was keeping it from tipping over out of the way and then ran back inside really fast. So he was able to tip the compost bin over and get out.
You hear a big crash a few seconds later.
Yeah. And then a raccoon went shooting across the street. So, raccoons. We have a lot of raccoons in Pacifica.
I saw two raccoons walking across the street yesterday.
During the daytime?
No, at night. Oh, okay. Hand in hand almost. It's like skirting, but it looks like a shadow. Yeah.
They look really big. City raccoons are big.
It's because they get fat off all that excess food we throw out.
Sweet trash. Microsoft has a new corporate logo.
That was exciting.
Really?
It's the first time they've changed their logo since 1987.
It's really?
25 years of the same logo.
Wow.
We've known. The new logo... is no longer angled, no longer italicized. It looks less fat. It does not have the awesome little sharp, what was it? Like it was the F that was kind of like had that cool angle.
It's F or T.
The S or maybe Microsoft. Yeah. Like that cut.
Some of that stuff
O.
was connected.
I like that. And it's their fifth logo overall as a company.
I
so
like
right
the
now
first
it's
one.
Like it's very simple. If you look, I think it's the same font.
It's Calibri, isn't it?
I don't think it's Calibri. It's the same font they've used for like Office for a while.
Oh, okay.
Except the F and the T at the very end are connected, and then also attached to the word Microsoft on the left side is a grid of squares, colored squares, that is now officially part of the logo.
It indicates squares. That it's Windows. Those four squares are Windows, aren't they? That's what they were before. Each one was a window in the old days. Because
yes.
it used to be from the
now
Windows
I
logo.
See Metro or modern style tiles.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, except they used to be tilted or wavy or something, and now they're just flat square.
Well, we've had a transition, because for a while they were wavy, and then they got kind of angled and not so wavy, and now they're just squares.
Apparently, these squares are almost exactly like the ones they had in an ad for Windows 95.
That sounds right.
On TV. It's like the red is slightly different color, but otherwise...
So Wes Fenlon is saying that Microsoft hasn't had an original idea since 1995?
Exactly.
Okay, sounds good. Curiosity rolled out. It's finally moved. It's the rover. It's on Mars.
Literally.
Well, you guys were really excited about this last week. I was expecting something.
I mean, it has Curiosity's wheels. It's been on Mars for over 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
2.5 weeks now. And
it's been doing some science. They blasted a rock with a laser.
Yep. But over a 2-year mission, it's got to test all of its equipment. And so it's tested, it's deployed the mast.
The mast is deployed a long time ago.
It's used the laser on the mast, spectrum laser, and now it has rolled several feet and made a turn, rolled back in position.
It went 15 feet, it rotated 120 degrees, and then it went another 8 feet. The tracks look pretty cool. That's what I got.
Has NASA put out any more of the fully 3D explorable photos that you can just turn around.
The panoramas, you mean?
Yeah.
There are, I don't know if they've released any, all the raw images are there. You could assemble them if you wanted.
Because they have at least one that you can
spin.
Yeah, and it looks just awesome.
Yeah. They found out that the wind sensor was damaged a little bit in the landing. It seems like they'll be able to fix that.
Okay.
Or maybe not. They're not sure. I don't know. I can't remember what that one said, actually.
How important is the wind sensor for Curiosity?
I don't know. I mean,
is there redundancy on the wind sensor?
Can it just lick its finger and stick it up in the air?
Like, I mean, are they trying to gather data about like Mars atmosphere, or is that more of a, we don't want to move the rover too much if it's too windy?
I don't know.
Something might happen.
I think probably moving the rover, it's probably multiple purposes.
It gets really windy on Mars.
The primary mission of Curiosity is to look at the geological history of Mars. And the reason it was in the Gale crater is because after geologists had studied all the orbiting or photos from orbit, determined that along that crater, you can see basically the entire history of Mars from various levels. So as it climbs up Mount Sharp, I think,
yeah,
at every layer, it will, you know, scan the dirt, just laser the dirt and figure out what Mars is like millions of years ago, maybe hundreds of thousands of years ago.
So the first thing it's doing is heading for a spot where three types of terrain meet. So that way, get multiple, more science in one space, which seems like a good idea.
But it will never leave the Gale crater.
Really?
Yeah.
Can't get out?
I don't think it'll.
Never say never.
More than enough within that crater. Massive, massive crater.
You think there's enough science inside the crater?
Yes.
Okay. OnLive laid all of its employees off and sold itself because it was out of money and, they were going to shut down otherwise.
Yeah, that was kind of a bummer.
I don't know, for the people
who work
there. Oh, yeah. It's definitely bad for the people who work there. I mean, they made a service that was okay and kind of technically neat, but I don't really understand who it was for at this point.
So. It was for hotels.
Have you ever seen OnLive in a hotel?
Well, no, that was their failure, not getting OnLive in hotels.
Oh, okay.
People in hotels.
Have you ever played a GameCube game in a hotel or an N64 game?
I remember those wannabe GameCube controllers.
They were GameCube controllers.
Were they real game controllers?
Yeah, Nintendo had a deal with Spectre Vision.
I thought they were knockoffs that looked like it would also work with like the hotel hardware.
For a long time, you could play N64 games on Spectre Vision.
And that business, I think, doesn't make sense anymore because people have smartphones.
And iPads and stuff like that.
And other laptops to distract themselves.
I mean, my MacBook Just Air like, I wonder, can play TF2.
I wonder what porn subscriptions are like in hotel rooms now that people have smartphones.
I bet that there's an experience difference there.
Oh, if hotels should like totally violate net neutrality by just blocking all porn sites on phones.
You've never been to a hotel that blocks very massive swaths of the internet, not just porn sites, but like inappropriate content?
Yeah, blocking. If you want inappropriate content, buy it from us through the TV.
I've been to hotels that block YouTube before, so.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they could get away with that now, but that was 4 or 5 years ago.
Wow.
And I mean, like if you're in a Best Western with 200 rooms, 150 rooms, and they have a 1.5 megabit DSL connection, I'm actually okay with them blocking YouTube just so the rest of the internet's usable.
Free internet at a hotel is no longer a perk at this point.
You only have to pay at really expensive places.
No, expensive places are the places that should
include it
for free.
I agreed. What I'm saying is the only place I've paid for internet in a hotel in years is an expensive hotel.
It's why we have the MiFi.
Yeah. Motorola rolled out a bootloader unlocker last week to let you, you know, root and unlock the bootloader on newer Motorola phones. This is always a good thing. Yeah, this is a good thing. They don't think it's going to work on old devices. So if you have a Droid, I think Droid was always okay, but if you have a Atrix or some of the 2011 model phones, they're probably not going to support that. So that's a bit of a bummer, but that's good. EA is probably for sale.
What?
Yeah.
You want to buy EA?
No.
I'll start a Kickstarter.
We could kickstart us buying EA.
If it costs as much as Mirror's Edge, I'm in.
If
$5.
Hold on.
EA.
Who's the president? If the three of us bought EA and a Kickstarter.
I don't want to be the president.
I don't either because it's just going to get yelled at by shareholders.
Yeah. I'll be president.
Wes is the powerless figurehead. Perfect. Who's in charge of games? Do you play games anymore, Norm?
EA, I want to be in charge of...
You're in charge of EA Sports. Congratulations. Oh,
it's the worst job in the world.
EA Sports, big.
It's in the game.
Thank you.
Is that still their thing?
I haven't played EA Sports. The last EA Sports game I played was Tiger Woods 2012.
When was the best EA Sports year?
1994.
98.
No, 94 was Hockey and Madden on Genesis. That was a fantastic year for sports games.
98 was awesome.
Didn't sports games really
FIFA 98
suck
was really
then,
good.
Though?
No, they were great. That was when the dawn of four players on the same console. It was the high point for couch gaming.
I have Madden 93 on the Genesis, and it's pretty awful.
94 was really good because it was one of the first years that had real rosters, as I recall. And the hockey game that year, or the hockey game I had for Genesis, you could make your own dude. So you basically just copied Gretzky and then put your name on him, and it was usually something offensive.
Well, hockey games were always kind of an exception to the sports game suck rule because it was just fights, basically. You played like 2 minutes of hockey and then you made your dudes beat the shit out of each other.
They took that out eventually. You couldn't fight anymore in EA hockey games.
So nobody plays them, right?
That's when I stopped playing them. But for a long time, EA hockey games were just like the one-touch game. So it was all about getting up, setting up a pass, and then one-touching it into the goal. There were only like two goalkeepers in the game that could defend that. It was a great game.
I want to be in charge of the AI that creates the fake announcers.
Oh, you mean
that better?
You really need to be in charge of the dialogue so that John Madden has to record more than three lines every year. Pow! That was a big hit. That's big time football. That's all I got.
I hate planes.
Yeah. You want some turkey? Nintendo Power shut down this week.
That's kind of sad.
They're going to run through December 2012 issue, and then that's it. It's been up for 24 years.
Did you guys ever subscribe?
I did.
I know you worked.
Fuck yeah, I subscribed.
I subscribed when I was 10 years old, when I was 12 years old, 14 years old.
Me too.
Old.
Best issues of Nintendo Power? Let's go through them.
Claymation, Super Mario Brothers 2.
That was issue number one.
Yeah, that was peaked early.
What? No, Zelda 50th issue.
Oh, that one
Power.
Was good. That one was
the gold
good.
Cover.
Yeah, that was after I stopped subscribing.
Nintendo Power with the Donkey Kong iron on T-shirt thing.
That was pretty cool. I just liked going to when Howard went to CES to see about the new games before E3 existed.
Howard
Stringer. No, not Howard Stringer. Howard. There used to be a dude who was like the mascot for Nintendo Power called Howard.
You talking about Nestor?
Nestor was the mascot, but Howard was the guy who went places with Nestor.
Nestor was a cartoon character.
Nestor was a sketch cartoon character. Nestor went to CES too.
Okay. I remember the Star Fox comics. Awesome. The entire six issue comic series in Nintendo Power was basically a recreation of the first level of StarCraft or Star Fox.
Do you remember? Oh, do a barrel roll?
It had dual barrel roll and it had shoot the enemy from the back.
Do you remember the weak spot for maximum massive damage? Hit the weak spot. Did it say that? Do you remember when you used to take pictures of your screen when you had a high score and you'd mail them into Nintendo Power and they'd run the best high scores in the magazine? Those were good times.
Yeah. Also, so. the best thing ever from Nintendo Power was the sweepstakes. Oh, mail in that card in the middle of Nintendo Power with how many games you buy per month. What are the kind of games you like? Basically the customer
free
survey.
Free marketing information.
Free marketing survey. But you had a chance to win 20 Nintendo games or the grand prize every month. Something crazy like here's Sigourney Weaver's sleep chamber from Alien.
Really?
You could win that. You could win RoboCop's car was 1 year or one month. RoboCop's car.
We should track down the people who won some of that stuff.
No, they did a whole retrospective of people who actually won stuff. Like for RoboCop's car, they had to pull off all the mentions of police. So basically, it was just a beat up car.
Wow, it was probably a Taurus or something, wasn't it?
It had no like police lights or anything. It was just like a gray car.
Not as much of a prize as expected.
OCP.
There was one prize. It was meet Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the guy had to wait like a year after he won, and then basically Arnold Schwarzenegger was flown in and went to his door and shook his hand, and left.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. But there were some pretty sweet prizes.
I like the old claymation covers. Those were awesome. Like somebody, they would make a still life out of clay and show because they thought the 8-bit graphics were too bad or 16-bit graphics were too bad to show.
Best one was WrestleMania. Was it WrestleMania? WWF? Hulk Hogan jumping on someone holding an SNES controller.
Yeah.
Nintendo Power. Fond memories.
Yeah. So it looks like the staff is going to move on to other stuff at future. So we wish them the best. Kinect price drop.
How much was Kinect originally?
$150.
And how much is it now?
$110.
Yeah, still not interested.
Good talk. The worst job at Google, Did you read this article? It was terrifying. They hire these guys to come in and monitor the cesspool, the seedy underbelly of the internet.
This is where I want to see Mike Rowe and Dirty Jobs go next. Oh. Mike Rowe and Dirty Jobs should visit Google and
be the porn, filter guy.
Google hires out contractors to basically go through flagged videos that violate the terms of service.
Everything. And search results and everything.
And mark them for deletion or delete things. And the worst part is they have to watch the entire video to judge whether the video is unsuitable for YouTube. And these videos
It's not as unsuitable. It's illegal or violates the terms of service.
Exactly. And the videos are of
like beheadings.
Beheadings, child pornography, weird body mutilation, gross stuff. And they have to watch the entire video. And Google, to their
credit, have to watch the whole video?
I think the watch.
I think once you get to a certain point, once the head comes off, you can say, okay, this is a beheading video. It's against the term of service.
But then at that point, it can't get much worse, really.
Well,
I guess I don't know
about that.
Yes.
Google does offer one counseling session.
Oh, that's great.
To these counselors these contractors.
This seems like a horrible job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right up there with the bull masturbator and all the other stuff we've seen Mike Rowe do over the years. That's a terrible job. And they always say if you do, it seems like the story implied that when they're hired, they say, if you do this for a year, we'll bring you on full time.
All contractors at Google, you know, they're on a probationary basis, and
you have a year, right?
Basically about a year or 9 months, and they might get brought up to the big leagues, but for this type of job, unlikely.
That is a year of heavy drinking.
Yeah. Norm, you put something on this list here that I have not heard yet.
Yeah. Apple removes its terrible genius ads from the internet.
So they've expunged them?
Yes. Those ads that we saw during the Olympics no longer exist.
Oh, those were so bad.
So bad. Hey, this plane's about to land. I need to edit this video with iMovie. I need genius to help me.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Hey, my wife's pregnant and I'm on my way to the hospital, but I need to make a card to send people to let them know that the baby's being born now.
iCards. Let's do it.
So that's good. Michigan is testing cars that talk to each other.
Yeah.
Is this Detroit?
I don't think it's in Detroit.
Is it a University of Michigan project?
The state of Michigan.
The state?
I think, I'm pretty sure it's a state.
Good grief.
Has funded, I think, $25 million.
That doesn't seem like very much.
To put sensors in cars so they can communicate accidents to other cars nearby them. So, for example.
So it's Big Brother watching the car?
Well, if you're, it's
they want to know where I am, where I'm going, and how fast I'm going, where I'm driving.
If you're driving and there is the driver in front of you, three cars in front of you,
slammed on his brakes,
or hit another car, you don't want to be part of that pile up. Mm. And the cars can then send. I mean, we're going to get to a point where cars will talk to each other, and it's good.
What if I'm the Google porn watcher guy and I just don't want to live anymore? What if I just make the decision at that point to not, you know?
Well, I don't think we're going to get to a point where the car will. I mean, it'll alert you, but the car will not stop on its own. Hmm. They're not going to take the control out of the driver's hands.
Well, some cars do that now. Some cars have collision avoidance where they'll slam on the brakes if they think you're about to hit something.
Like the rear camera stuff?
Not the rear camera. Like you're driving down the road.
They'll have front sensors.
Yeah, they have front sensors. And if there's an object in the road or something, the car will
jam the brakes. If you're moving at a certain speed and there is an object.
Like 60 miles an hour. I'm talking about highway speed.
The car will just brake. That is kind of scary.
Yeah. Well, so I saw a Google self-driving car the other day, just driving down 101.
Okay, what does it look like?
It's a Prius, and it was dark gray, the kind of charcoal-y gray color.
And they all have passengers, or they have drivers in them, but they're not actually for emergency.
There were two people in this one, okay. A passenger and a driver, and it looked like the passenger was getting a demo, or the driver was getting a demo or something. She was like waving her arms around. Of course, we were parked in traffic on 101, so it wasn't that impressive. But the self-driving car has a little spinny mirror thing on the top that was spinning really, really fast. It looked kind of like the Street View one, but smaller and shinier and spinning. And it said Google self-driving car in yellow font on the side. So they were letting people know that it was a self-driving car.
And the driver had its hands on the wheels.
The driver was gesticulating wildly.
Really?
Yes. Her hands were all over the place. She was like, I looked over and I was like, her hands were in her lap and then her hands were up in the air. Her hands were very clearly not on the wheel. So
doing some tests,
but I was in the right lane going about 10 miles an hour and they were one lane over going no miles an hour. So the car wasn't really self-driving when I saw it was more self stuck in traffic.
Yeah. I find all that technology super exciting. Just the thought that in 10 or 20 years, how many traffic accidents could potentially be cut down on by the wireless communication. And I mean, the self-driving thing is going to take a really long time.
A long time.
But
thank you, bureaucracy.
Everything that makes our cars more situationally aware and can increase your action times and stuff is a good thing.
Well, so do you ever watch those videos of like the intersections in Asia or the demos of the cars that don't need stoplights? Like when everything's self-driving.
Are you saying that self-driving, like organic traffic is much like in Asia where there's no traffic
where there's
lights?
No rules and people just drive in whatever direction they want. Everybody dodges everybody else. Oh, yes, God. That's what I'm saying.
That's terrifying.
Well, you've seen the simulations, though, of the intersections, yeah, of course. The 12-lane intersections where the cars just barely miss each other as they're going wildly through these tiny gaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want that. I think I would have to wear an adult diaper if I was riding a car that did that
regularly.
Embrace
the future, Will. Embrace it.
Well, there we go. Adult diapers, here we come. The oatmeal, Matthew Inman. Ingram? Inman. Something like that. Inman. Wanted to make a museum for Tesla, and he raised $800,000. Nikola Tesla.
Guy is a champion.
Norm, you look like you just remembered something. Or do you need an adult diaper?
I got a delivery that I missed from the post office.
Today?
A couple days ago. And I did not know what the delivery was from or what it was. And I hope they haven't returned it because I think it's my ordered from the oatmeal sriracha flavored popcorn.
Oh, you got sriracha flavored popcorn?
God damn it.
Wow, that's going to be disappointing if you missed that. I thought that was about the Tesla Museum. Anyway, the Tesla Museum seems like...
it's oatmeal related.
They got a good start. So 800 grand, I think, is what they raised on that. So.
And it's being matched by a university or something for the same amount. So they've actually raised 1.7 million.
That's good.
Yeah.
And they're going to build the museum on the site of his lab as featured in such films as The Illusionist or The Prestige. The Prestige, yeah. I think they should just hire David Bowie to sit there and play Nikola Tesla all day.
Expect a delivery by August 22nd with delivery confirmation. That was yesterday.
That was yesterday.
Wes?
Nothing came yesterday.
Oh!
So that'll do it for news this week, unless you guys have anything else. Let's play some music and talk about what we've been testing. Hey, Norman Chan.
Hello, Wes Smith.
What have you been testing?
I saw Paranorman.
How was that for you?
It was awesome. It's awesome.
Did you feel like it mirrored any events that you were familiar with from your own life?
No, except the kid's name was Norman.
But just a little weirder.
It's not often you see a hero in a movie named Norman, though.
Exactly. But it was a fantastic opportunity since the movie was called Paranorman and it's a play off Paranormal. And there were jokes in the movie about him being Abnorman and abnormal.
So, do you think you're Abnorman?
I got all the flashbacks and all the name puns.
Oh boy,
from that movie.
Was the movie written by a guy named Norman? How did he? You think he went to elementary schools and did research about what it's like to be named Norman?
He did not do any research
mm-hmm.
about that. The movie was made by Leica, the same company who made Coraline. They did stop motion.
Leica, the camera, the lens people.
No. Leica, as in the first dog in space.
Oh.
L-I-A-I-K-A.
Yes. I love Coraline. It's one of my favorite.
Coraline was directed by Henry Selick, who also directed Nightmare Before Christmas. But this movie was not. And stop motion animation is very expensive to produce. So like movies like Fantastic Mr. Fox, where they had to build, you know, not only the sets, but every character in different animation.
Crazy, crazy complex marionettes.
Yes, you have to build maquettes and marionettes, but for a movie like Fantastic Mr. Fox, you have animals talking, so you don't have that like too many facial expressions. You don't have to build too many heads for each figure. For a movie like Coraline or Paranorman, where it's human characters, you have to build a lot of faces. And the way they got the cost down for this movie is something interesting. They built 3D models and they built using 3D models. They 3D printed the figures. So
okay.
3D printed faces using stuff like a
sintering process.
No, it's like fingerprints. So it's like the
that is a sintering process.
It's the sand, basically. Yeah, colored sand.
You blast the colored sand and then laser fuse it in place.
And you could tell in the movie that these were 3D printed.
So did they move though?
Of course. Well, I mean,
did they print each frame?
No. They printed each face.
Okay.
So like for example, you'll have a character. I don't have a photo I can show, but you have like a maquette that's, you know, about 8 inches tall or 10 inches tall, and the faceplate is removable with different, mm-hmm. You have like, the animator will have a box of like 24 faces that they'll swap in for every
Each frame is a different face?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's crazy.
With different eyebrows and different stuff, and each of those faces is 3D printed, and you could tell that the characters didn't look super smooth on their faces. It wasn't like someone painted it with a paintbrush because it was all 3D printed.
So how long, I mean, they must have had millions and millions of faces and models made. Well,
not million, thousands.
Wow, that's a lot of frames.
When you say it looked kind of rough, is that like in a good way? Like, did that add to the style of the movie, or did you think
if you've ever seen like a figure prints, you know, Warcraft figure, the 3D printed.
Yeah.
Like
the doesn't sand, look as good it, as you'd expect.
It doesn't look that great. It's a little, it has a rough texture to it, and the colors look a little muted because you don't have vibrant, crazy vibrant colors. And I think that it was definitely noticeable in the movie. It did not look as polished as like a Coraline.
I loved Coraline. I saw a thing on Reddit or Facebook, or I can't remember if it was a friend or an internet thing, but somebody, when their kid is being bad, they just put black buttons and a needle and thread on their pillow to remind them, you know, I could be a worse mom.
So
that was really fucked up.
You could
up.
Be Terry Hatcher?
Button eyes. Nobody wants button eyes.
Paranorman made $18 million over the weekend.
That's a lot of money.
How is that for, because stop motion movies are expensive, like you said.
I don't know the exact production budget. I don't think it was more than $100 million to make.
Wow.
I don't think it was more than $100 million to make.
It's a lot for an animated movie.
I don't think that is enough money to recuperate all of its costs.
Because Coraline did really well in theaters, didn't it? Didn't it do pretty well? Maybe I'm wrong on that.
Coraline was an early 3D release too.
Right.
So they probably cranked up revenue on that per seat.
Well, hopefully Paranorman will be a success for them.
I really liked Coraline. I liked that. I thought it was a really nice stop motion. And the thing I liked about Coraline is that the 3D that they showed in the theaters, I don't have the 3D Blu-ray because I have the weird glasses one, not the native one. But in theaters, the 3D like put a frame, like a picture frame around the scenes. So it was like you were looking into a puppet box.
That's really clever.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it wasn't a bunch of like, it wasn't a lot of the kind of DreamWorks-y style jump scares where they have a baseball come out of the screen or something stupid. I thought it was quite good.
Like, Coraline I made really $75 million overall, and its production budget was $60 million. So it did make its money back, although DVD costs or revenues probably compensated.
I would say they probably made more money on, as much money on DVDs again, because I bet they sold a lot of them.
No, you don't think so? Movies don't make that much money on DVDs.
Mm. Okay. I signed up for app.net despite my better judgment. It's just like Twitter, but with more characters and fewer people. So, you pay $50. I also saw a service called ihave50.com.
Really?
Yeah. It's just like app.net, but it's called ihave50.com.
Is it annual cost?
I think it's annual. I think the plan is that it's going to be annual. It remains to be seen whether it's worth signing up for multiple times.
No thanks.
I don't know. If Twitter keeps fucking up worse and worse, then there will be a void in my life where Twitter lives.
It's still a company that needs to make money and wants to make money. So,
The thing is, I'd happily pay that money to Twitter if they would not fuck up the service that I like. We have a liquid nitrogen doer.
Yeah. It's a doer spelled D-E-W-A-R.
I talked about it on the Bombcast last week, but I don't think we've talked about it here yet.
No, you bought it on Amazon.
It's like a huge thermos. It's a very well-insulated thermos. It keeps liquid at negative 200 degrees Celsius, negative 371 degrees Fahrenheit. Not indefinitely, but basically...
Negative how many?
371 Fahrenheit.
What's that in Celsius? 200?
Negative 192 or something like that. Yeah.
I think it's like 190. It's
191, 197, somewhere in there.
197, because yeah. 196 is... the boiling point for
liquid nitrogen. Well, it keeps it at the boiling point. So what happens is the doer basically the danger of liquid nitrogen is twofold. First, it is very cold. Well, threefold. It's very cold to the point that you can do permanent damage to yourself in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. Like if you stick your fingers in there and leave it for a minute, they'll just come out like little brittle hot dogs. It's not good.
And snap off.
Yeah, you could break them off.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
It would hurt.
It's so bad you don't want to wear gloves.
My finger hurt. I'm making uncomfortable hand gestures now just thinking about this.
Yeah.
The other danger is asphyxiation. When it boils off, then it releases it's nitrogen gas.
How cold is space?
Well, it depends on what part of space you're talking about.
Like outer space.
It depends on what part of it. Like interplanetary space can get near absolute zero.
Outer planetary space.
I mean, it's cold. It's that cold.
Mm. Okay.
Wear a jacket.
Yeah, you want? Yeah, exactly.
Wear a scarf.
Yeah, put on your mittens, kids. It'll asphyxiate you if you fill a room with it because it's a little bit heavier than oxygen and normal air. So it will push the oxygen out of the room and it's colorless and odorless. So you won't know until it's too late that you're suffocating. It expands when it expands at like a 6-to-1 ratio when it goes from liquid to gas. So, if you put it in something that's a sealed container, it will increase pressure inside that container
and
until it reaches the point that something fails and it will explode. So, but on the other hand, there's a bunch of cool stuff that you can do with it for science.
So if you put liquid nitrogen, is the Dewar strong enough to hold it for until it dissipates completely?
The thing about the Dewar is it's not sealed. There's no way to screw the lid shut on the Dewar. It's basically just a cork, a plug. The cap is a piece of foam that's about 6 inches long.
It
goes into the neck.
And shoot the cork up?
Well, no. When the pressure increases, it just lifts up a little bit and it just dissipates naturally.
Oh, just the pressure.
Yeah. Okay. So the pressure of the gas inside, the cork doesn't weigh very much. So it just kind of bounces up and it happens at such a slow rate you don't even notice.
Yeah. And eventually, if you don't use it,
20 days later, it'll go away, starting with a full Dewar is what the Dewar that we bought on Amazon advertises. I haven't actually tested
it. And it's about a 5-liter.
It's a 5-liter Dewar. It's about, it was $430-some shipped.
Five liters is a lot of liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, I find that you can make a quart of ice cream with about a quart of liquid nitrogen, about a liter of liquid nitrogen.
Because you don't, I mean, you can refill it every day if you wanted.
You can fill it as often as you want. Yeah. You can get liquid nitrogen at welding supply places. So like if you have an air gas or something like that, then...
Which is the one in Bay Area they went to?
Air gas is the one that I went to. You have to call. A lot of places won't bother with a 5-liter size, so you probably want to call in advance. Too small.
What's the process of when you go into the welding shop, the dude pouring liquid nitrogen into the Dewar?
So there's two kinds of dudes. There's fillers and then there's sales guys. Sales guys are like sales guys everywhere. They're kind of laughing and telling dick jokes and all that. The fillers are kind of big, big, beefy guys. And they wear heavy steel-toed boots and they're wearing specific kinds of clothes. And basically they have a big hose that comes off of a big giant Dewar. A big metal cylinder that's like a 500-gallon one.
It's like filling up a gas tank.
They put the hose in the tank and fill it up until it spills over the top.
Wow.
And then push the cap down and blast a little bit more out, and then your Dewar's full.
Wow.
So you have to be careful when you grab the metal because sometimes it's real cold. That's pretty much it.
Liquid nitrogen is cold.
Yeah, we froze a bunch of stuff, and there will be video. You can do... Like I said, I've made some ice cream with it. I've had real mixed results. I'm having a hard time with my ice cream recipes right now.
Is the advantage of using liquid nitrogen there just speed, or just because it's kind of fun and awesome?
It's twofold, right? The speed at which you freeze the custard to make the crystals form, the faster you freeze it, the smaller the crystals are, so the creamier and smoother the ice cream is.
Okay.
The other thing is you basically don't need any prep. You don't have to fool with the ice cream churn or any of that nonsense.
Yeah, because I've done ice cream with like a machine that'll rotate it, and you have a bunch of ice and like rock salt that you pour in there to keep it cold, but that takes a while. It
takes like 30 or 40 minutes to churn.
Yeah. You can also freeze off moles.
You can freeze off moles. We could do that. I thought about pouring it down the holes in my yard where the moles live.
Different type of mole.
Oh. You can use it to kill weeds. When I use whatever's left, I pour it on weeds that grow up in my
really?
Flower bed. Yeah, because it freezes, it just dies instantly.
Really?
It's kind of expensive for that.
Oh, damn, I killed the weeds in my backyard.
It's 20 bucks, I think, to fill up the 5-liter, plus a little bit of a filling charge.
That is totally worth it. The amount of fun you can have with 5 liters of liquid nitrogen is so worth $20.
And there's a lot of places you can rent Dewars, like for a week or two. So you don't necessarily have to spend $500 on the door. Also, if you know somebody at a welding shop, you might be able to just get them to top off your styrofoam cooler. But
this
it won't
week
last
we
as
learned,
long.
Don't be afraid of welding. Don't be afraid of doors.
Yeah.
Liquid nitrogen.
That is way, way cheaper than I would have expected.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can do a lot of... the thing is nitrogen's in the air. So the only thing you need to separate nitrogen out of the air and make it liquid is a compressor that's a pretty beefy compressor. But like you can build a machine for $100 that will just pull the nitrogen out of there and dump it in the doer for you if you want.
Really?
Yeah.
Make liquid nitrogen out of nothing.
Yeah. Well, it'll electricity. You use energy. It costs $30 a month probably to run.
Yeah. You can make a lot more than 5 liters.
Well, no, it makes about 5 liters a week, the how-tos that I've seen. So you would have a week's supply. I find that 5 liters is as much as I can use in a week. Liquid nitrogen. It's cool. All the kids are doing it.
It's very cold.
It is very cold. Like it's so cold that when you pull the cork out, like mist, fog evaporates. We froze the air. You can freeze the air if you put liquid nitrogen in a metal container. Wow. That's crazy.
Wow.
Chrome for iOS. Are you guys using Chrome for iOS, Norm?
I am using Chrome for iOS. Haven't updated it in a while, though.
Can't help but notice that you're using Safari on that iPad right there.
Well, it's not my primary browser.
I've switched to it being my primary browser.
Ooh, how do you get around opening stuff from like Twitter?
Twitter uses the browser in the Twitter client.
I mean, like sends a browser because I hate Twitter. I hate the browser in the Twitter client.
I just use the browser in the Twitter client. If I'm going to read something, I usually send it to Instapaper.
Hmm.
I like it. They just updated it. So now it has Facebook and Twitter sharing and Google Plus, but who cares? So you can use the share button in Chrome to share to Facebook and Twitter.
I never share from a web browser directly to
you copy
those
the
social
link.
Service. I copy a link.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah, I don't want them to control the way I post.
The upshot is the browser setting syncing is incredibly useful to me, especially using the switching back and forth between the Nexus and the iPhone iPad. I think it's really good. You should try it out. It's free. Why not?
Yeah.
The scales is the scales. I've been testing scales. I'm still testing scales.
Have you made it come to a decision?
You mean about which one's better?
No, have you come to a decision on whether you will post your weight?
I have not come to a decision yet. There was no feedback last week.
No, there was plenty of feedback.
One person said, yes, I think that you should do that. One person is not a quorum. Played man up mode. Have you played man up mode?
Man up mode?
The man versus machine. Well, man up mode is the one where you pay the buck for the ticket.
I don't want to pay money.
Norm.
I don't want to pay money for hats. I don't need hats.
Norm.
I don't need hats. Do you need hats?
I got 2 hats last night.
Well, are they nice hats?
Fucking awesome hats.
Are the hats for
soldier hats?
I don't want to pay for hats.
I got a tricorn hat and hold on. It's not a tricorn hat. It's like a Master and Commander hat. It's one of those. It's a real dumb looking hat. It's a good hat. It's 99 cents. It's for the kids at Valve. I like the horde mode. It's pretty good. The man up mode is a little sleazy though because it's a lot easier than the hard versions of the non-paid.
Well, they want you to pay more money.
Machine.
They want you to be happy with your...
Yeah, but I would rather have more challenge and have more fun than
you know, you can suffer. Have more challenge by playing with an idiot.
There's enough idiots on the internet.
Exactly.
I had a good team last night.
That's the challenge.
We had a good crew.
Succeed despite your teammates.
Blew right through it. There's a whole bunch of bad, big giant monsters. It's a very well done.
The monsters, the giant ones aren't as big as I'd like them to be.
There are some that are really big.
How big is really big?
Like, the height of a building.
Okay, I have not seen those yet.
Yeah. Like the scout, some of it just requires you to really be on the
like
ball.
One story building or two story building?
Two story building.
I have not seen the ones that are as big as two story building.
They're all the big ones are the same big. And then there's the tank. Have you seen the tank yet?
Which one's the tank?
The big thing that doesn't shoot. It just takes like 5 minutes to kill. Absorbs damage. You have not seen it. You have not played this mode yet. We need to play this. This is good.
I have not played up to the point where I've seen that big mode, big tank.
Yeah, you should play. Have you played this, Wes?
I have not. I'm not really a Team Fortress 2 guy, sad to say.
Fine.
Yeah.
The problem with Man vs. Man is that Man vs. Machine is if you like a certain class, the people you play with online get really prissy about what classes are the best combination
for
a certain map.
Well, you have to, the thing is.
So you have to be flexible in what type of class you play as.
Well, and you have to be prepared to handle specific roles. Like the way we did it last night that worked really well is like somebody volunteered to be medic, somebody volunteered to be heavy, somebody volunteered to be engineer.
Someone has to. If you play with a bunch of people and everyone, no one's good at, no one wants to be scout, then you're not going to collect the money.
Well, no, because we our spy collected money.
Play with the spy.
So this is the point is you have to fill the roles. It's just like a MMO or something like that where you have to fill in kind of class duties, and one person has to be responsible for killing the spies, and one person has to be responsible for collecting money, and one person has to be responsible for hauling ass back to the base to stop that one guy that snuck through. And like once you figure that stuff out, it's really easy.
Norm sounding a little classist here with your
Norm's super classist
unwillingness to,
well established
pick the right man for the team.
Norm, the secret about Norm and Team Fortress is Norm is only playing for one thing, the kill to death ratio.
It does not matter. They don't count how many kills you have in Man vs. Machine.
It's infinite kills. They do count how many kills you have. It just doesn't show up on the board.
It does not show up on the board.
Yeah. Okay, let's play some music, take some questions, and call it a day.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
Yeah, we don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep it short, under 45 seconds. Make sure you don't sound like you're recording it on a train or bus or airplane or spaceship. Send us questions. We always like questions. Here's the first question.
Hello, Tested crew. This is Samuel from hell. And a little hometown trivia. Did you know that down here, everything is burning? So my question is your podcast setup, you know, what microphones do you use? How do you set it all up with your soundboard, get all that together, get it recorded? How do you live stream it? What program do you use? I assume using a Mac, of course. No implication there. And so I haven't heard you answer this question in a while. So I was just wondering what the update is on the latest that you're using, whether you upgraded mics or your software or your setup at all. So that's it.
So, I didn't hear the first part of that question with the scary voice, or else I probably wouldn't have run that one. But
yeah, I was a little distracted there by the Samuel being from hell part.
Yeah, it must be from...
It sounded like a belch.
Kind of, yeah, but a devil belch. We use Audio-Technica microphones. I don't remember the specific model number, but they were about $150 each, which is kind of a lot. If I were doing it over again, I would probably make sure I bought a microphone that had the pop filter built in, so we don't have to have these annoying things in front of us all the time. Since we travel with them fairly regularly now. The mic stands, you guys are using kick bass drum stands, I think, which work really well in the office.
Yeah,
I'm using just a $20 mic stand that I got, I think, when we were playing Rock Band at home all the time. The mixer that we use is a M-Audio Fast-Track Ultra 8R. It's an 8-channel mixer. It's like $300. Plugs via USB to GarageBand or Mac or PC. You can use Audacity or GarageBand with it. We use GarageBand just because it works reasonably well. And then to play music like this and the questions, I use a piece of software called Soundboard, which is made by the same people who make Wiretap and all that. And I just pipe that into an input on the mixer.
Is that free?
No, it's $30. Well worth it.
Just drag and drop file audio files in.
Yeah, you drag the audio file into the square. There's like shortcuts. A keyboard worth of squares, and you can play just from the keyboard shortcuts if you want, which is really good. For the video side, it's a lot more complex. The video side, we're using the studio cameras we use, which are Panasonic 720p P2 cameras that are pretty expensive for normal people. Pipe that into we're still figuring out the best way to do that. But basically, I edit that in Final Cut. And usually what I do is master the audio podcast first and then drag that audio into Final Cut so that the audio is the same across the board. I don't always do that because sometimes it just doesn't work very well. And we're having a little bit of trouble getting sync between the P2 card recording audio and the audio recording. So I don't know what's going on there, but I think I figured that out last week. Did I forget anything? Is that it?
No, that's it.
Yeah, so it's
GoPros also work if you want to spend time encoding.
Yeah, the GoPros are great, except for it literally took like 3 hours extra to do the video encode. So yeah, so that's how we do the podcast. And that'll do it for questions this week. As always, podcasttest.com. Keep them short. We'll see you guys next week. For Norman Chan and Wesley Fenlon, anything to plug either of you guys?
I'm good.
Norman?
Good.
Okay, we'll be back next week with another episode of This Is Only a Test. Stay tuned for fake outtakes. See you guys later. Today's outro comes from Tidy Game, I think.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
the dice, scrape off the tartar sauce, and just eat fish.
Because if you didn't do that, I would have said that was gross.
So should we talk about the thing we did this last weekend and no. earlier this week?
No. Also have to move my car.
Oh. So we're not going to do fake outtakes because you didn't want to pay $4 for parking?
Is it $16 for parking?
It's and, $9 on those meters over there.
So not $4.
Well, for 4 hours, you could have parked for... Oh, fuck. Okay. If I have to pause, it makes the... We're just not going to have fake outtakes this week. Sorry. It's because of Norm. See you guys next week.
Ooh, Norm.
Thank you, Soma. San Francisco.
Bye. Should we talk about having AC while Norm goes and moves his car, Wes?
Sure.
We have air conditioning. We have things blocking the white hot light of 1,000 burning sun skylights. Way to walk in front of the shot, Chan.
It's the hot of one sun. The heat of one sun.
There's a million suns out there.
The office is really coming together because I haven't been in here for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And there's like shelves. And
yeah.
There's air conditioning.
We have a green screen.
Yeah. There's not.
The white hot light of 1,000 burning suns.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We have a refrigerator and a water cooler. We have some food.
You could pretty much live here now.
Yeah, no bed. The couches are okay though.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we've been doing pretty much.
Wirecutter stuff.
What should we talk about wirecutter stuff? Oh, you were working on wirecutter, aren't you?
I am working on wirecutter.
So that's our friend Brian's site.
Brian Lamb, who is probably snorkeling in Hawaii right now.
He's surfing or being eaten by a shark or something, yeah. You know, there's a Twitter account for the shark that's going to eat him.
There is, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still being updated, but...
Occasionally. So what have you written for Wirecutter lately?
So lately,
we love Wirecutter. Just to be clear, Norm and I love Wirecutter. It's a good site. He does a really good job
with
it. It's
a cool site.
Despite hiring you.
Yeah. I'm the worst part about it easily.
Yeah,
no,
for sure.
So lately, I've been pretty much on a tech beat with him, as expected, I guess, doing... some laptop stuff. Like I did a gaming laptop. The one that just went up today is like the best cheap laptop to get, which was the HP G6T. It's like $450 base. I think you should spend an extra $100, get a $550 version because that has an Ivy Bridge i5 in it.
Instead of a Sandy Bridge.
Yeah.
Okay.
The big advantage there is the HD 4000 graphics mm-hmm. are just way better than the Sandy Bridge ones.
So we should take a step back and explain what Wirecutter is, though.
Yeah, so it's basically just a top list of the best one thing in any given category.
Like a leaderboard, almost.
Yeah, so it's designed to be, I don't know, tailored to... It's not a, like, here's top five things. It's if you need a... good laptop for gaming, this mm-hmm. is the one you should get. And then in some of the articles will have a well, if you have these needs, here's the alternative.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's one thing.
And the idea is that you don't have to be a grognard to understand what to go buy.
Yeah, so for the most part, the descriptions, the articles or, you know, reviews, whatever you want to call them, will go into the specs of whatever the thing is or... you know, why it's good, but it's mostly based on either firsthand use or really reliable sources.
Like research.
Yeah. Research into, you know, I use Laptop Mag primarily
yeah.
because they are good laptop reviewers. They take into account heat and battery life and build quality, and they know what they're talking about because they test lots of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do other other sources too, and look at Amazon user reviews even. And, you know, a lot of times you can kind of tell this person doesn't really know what they're talking about. They're just like, it's broken. I don't know. But then there'll be other people who will actually do like benchmarking of their systems or have really good criteria. And you can kind of tell if something's coming out of the gate with like big reliability issues or something like that.
Well, and you're looking at kind of themes to come out of the aggregate is
exactly.
what it seems like one of his goals is with the site. So
yeah,
so yeah, you've written a couple of things over there. People should definitely go check it out. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's a really cool site, and he's expanded a lot beyond tech.
First it was just phones
yeah,
and routers.
Yeah, I think it kind of started with that, but now he's got like his big thing is the juicer for
the Omega 3000 or 2000 or something.
Throwing in, you know, carrots and kale and everything, and
yeah,
just drinking that up.
Brian Lamb is powered by kale.
But there have been even more like lifestyle things we picked, like air conditioning units and Blender was like one of the recent big big pieces. Stuff
I think
like
he
that,
liked the so. Vitamix, right? Whoever did that.
I think so, yeah.
I went and got one of those juicers, and it doesn't jack you up.
It doesn't?
I mean, it jacks you up a little bit, maybe. It's more like a sugar rush than anything else, though.
I would
Tastes
know.
Good. I like kale juice.
I should really do that, but I don't have the money or effort to spend.
It seems like a lot of time.
And, yeah, buying tons of fresh vegetables and drinking them.
Vegetable juice. Okay, I guess that'll do it for us this week, then.
Fake outtakes.
Fake outtakes. See you guys later. Bye.